Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcoat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews
by students for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
If you haven't noticed, Zika is in the news. It's a neglected tropical disease which has been linked to a frightening surge in birth defects in Central and South America. The response to Zika is going to depend upon the science, which is very much up in the air at this point. But it's also going to depend on economic and cultural factors. Chief among those are huge income disparities, population complexities, and limits on access to family planning options. On today's episode, Ellie Ginn, Marielle Maurice, Kevo Rivera, and Jessica Waters meet up with one of the researchers who is fighting this bug. Dr. Selma Geronimo isn't a household name in the U.S., but she is becoming one in her home country of Brazil. She's the director of the Institute of Tropical Medicine of Rio Grande do Norte and a professor of biochemistry and medicine at the Federal University of Rio Grande do Norte in Natal. Her job? Investigating Brazil's endemic diseases. With Zika spread to more than 20 countries, including the United States, we were excited to take advantage of her faculty appointment at the University of Iowa and her longtime collaboration with Iowa faculty and students to have her on the show.
So we're grateful to have Dr. Geronimo with us today to talk through the Zika virus outbreak. So I was just wondering if you could start off and just talk a little bit about your experience being in Brazil with the Zika virus and the outbreak that's there now and in the surrounding countries.
It's great to be here and talk to you guys. I think this outbreak is gives us an opportunity to think more about vector-borne diseases. And the report of the cases started about a year ago with people having presenting with some exanthema, that's like red spots, with mild fever, nothing really great, nothing even that people think, oh, it's going to be a sort of a mild dengue thing. So nobody even cared much about it. And then 2 or 3 months later, we start to see an increase in Guillain-Barré syndrome. So it was around April, May of last year. And then from having about 18 cases a year in our state, we had within 45 days, we had almost 20, or we had around 25 cases of Guillain-Barré. Mm-hmm. And then of course, when you start to see something like that, you see what's going on. So Zika was being documented, not in my state, but it had been documented in Bahia where the first case was molecularly diagnosed. So of course we jump to PubMed, Medline, and then you see there's a couple of papers from Polynesia indicating that they had seen an outbreak of Guillain-Barré syndrome after an outbreak of Zika. And so of course they had dengue as well there, so you have to search for all types of antibodies so that you know exposure to those other flavor virus. So people there, they could document that they had Zika antibodies, but they also had dengue and other. So, but it's there. I mean, it was associated with that. And we were seeing similar things. In September of last year, some of our colleagues from Natal and colleagues from Pernambuco start to see like a jump in microcephalic cases, but also some other malformations. And we had 6 children that were born with stillborns with severe. And so what was going on? And then mm-hmm. by association, they start to, a sort of temporal, nothing, no really epidemiological studies, then people start to bring, would that be a possibility that Zika is causing that? Mm-hmm. So, and it's been like very crazy since then because right now, when you look into Brazil overall, there's almost 4,000 cases of microcephaly, which mm-hmm. when you look into that, it's, Brazil has 200 million population, but it's almost, when you look at least the cases reported prior, it's at almost a tenfold increase. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we need to look carefully because you have to really document that that's the case, but that's based on clinical reports. Not all have been checked truly to make sure that those are microcephalic children. But anyway, it has increased. Mm-hmm. And then the virus is spreading like crazy everywhere. Most places have reported, and that's going also to other countries, as you are aware. And then it comes to the question that I think that's the question that we all want is vector transmission. Then if you live in an area that is the vector, then you have a risk. But then it's coming up also important information that are other ways of transmission. And so these other ways of transmission is important because it will mean how this blood bank warning, all the other things. But also it comes to another important question, I think, that is there viral persistence? Mm-hmm. If it is the cause of this sort of complications that we see, malformations, microcephaly, if there is viral persistence, what is the risk of someone once infected carry for some time? Like we've seen for other pathogens, not everyone will behave the same because of the way we are. We respond differently to infection.
Right.
But it's also an important research question. So right now, it's a lot of media. I mean, everyone is discussing. But what we have to do now and do it quick is actually the epidemiological studies. And I think that's where everyone is jumping now, is actually to get the data, to interpret, to see the confounding, and also understand those other things that will be very important in terms of public health everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody's a bit paralyzed initially, because when you look for Zika, and then you start looking, I was reading this week, trying to write a little proposal on this, and then you go back, there is a paper on the transaction of the Royal Society in 1953, not even your parents were here, and they're trying to develop an animal model of Zika, which give us some hints of clinical, of how you can sort of look for hints in terms of the clinical presentation that we see in humans. It seems not to have really a great animal reservoir, but maybe it's sort of an indication. So I think it was out there. So this virus was known since the late 40s, well documented in the 50s, then was sort of in Africa, then jumped to Asia and stayed quiet for very long. And then apparently because of this World Cup, which we did not do very well. I'm afraid to say that, as you all know. It seems that we just get the perfect, as we discussed yesterday, the perfect storm, having probably multiple infected people. And then we had already the vector that transmit this virus very well. That's Aedes aegypti. So I think it's like what we have now in what we're going to do with all this. So I think we actually need to do the real work now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Salma, I wanted to go back. First of all, it's good to see you again. for listeners, I suppose I should say, that I got the opportunity to work with Salma this past summer in Natal, which was an absolute blast. This woman is legendary where she comes from, and for a good reason. So in your position, you are the director of the Institute of Tropical Medicine in the state of Natal, Brazil. And so a lot of your work is research driven, but you also have a pretty unique position to make up-to-date recommendations to public health officials within Brazil. I wonder, with a situation like Zika, where there's still a lot of uncertainty, you're kind of trying to push for more research and more literature reviews and things like that, but you're also, I'm not sure, are you being courted by officials in Brazil, like asking for how they should be responding to this epidemic?
Each state government is handling the health secretariat of the states where there has been outbreak. they have a unit that should respond to problems like what we have in now. And also there's a sort of a central coordination of the Brazilian government on the Minister of Health. So they're trying to put together a task force. So they're inviting different scientists and physicians to actually be part of this task force. So we are included in sort of this task force. But to be able to address properly, we do need to do it first to understand what's going on, because we can't recommend if we don't have the data. So that's the goal for the next 3 months, is actually to understand what's going on. So I think that's what we're proposing to the Minister of Health, and then will be parallel work done in all states that are endemic, and then we put together this data, and then we can make recommendations, because we just don't know. We don't have enough data to actually put that. So I think the goal is that. The other thing is that we know right away is vector control. I mean, it's in some way, it's been a big challenge because the way the Aedes aegypti thrive in urban areas. So I think one thing that we all can do in Brazil right away is have a new force in terms of fighting the Aedes aegypti. And then as the time we get more information on those other things that are kind of brought up. But I think making sure that we can get a better, cleaner environment will be important. I mean, you visited some of those neighborhoods and you see that we almost getting into those neighborhoods, we know where to get vectors, either leishmania, either sand flies, which is the disease you studied, or in some places where the Roduvan bug and the Chagas that you also studied there are. And now, and of course, it's aegypti. So you can, so what we can do is actually have a sort of a healthier environment. And it can be anyone's task. I mean, each household has to take over what leads to vector increase in vector density. That's something that we can do right away without waiting for anything. And then we can work on the other things later that will take at least 3 to 6 months to actually have a sense of things. So I think the first thing that we can put, and I think that's what we are pushing, is that we need to do better. We all, as citizens, we have to discuss this. I was working in the field just prior to coming here, working on leishmania. That's in the same area of where there's some cases of microcephaly, and there is dengue and Zika. And I was talking to a 9-year-old girl and asked her about her knowledge of how can you get dengue. She explained exactly how this thing worked. And then I asked, what are we all doing in your block, in your neighborhood? And then she didn't answer. So the knowledge is there because people have been like on TVs and stuff is talking about how the vector, but we have to sort of leave the comfort of our houses and actually do something. And it's, I mean, this vector is pretty smart. I mean, it's like the other day we had like a piece of wood that was wet. We found eggs of Aedes aegypti in it. Our collaborator, Josélio Galvão, who you met there, he's a virologist. He works in our institute. Josélio has all the molecular diagnosis for all this flavivirus. So Josélio and his student is putting sort of a surveillance on places where they repair tires. So it's sort of the old fashioned the way they repair. So to make sure that it's not leaking, then they put it in a tank with water. Boy, you just eyeball with a flashlight and you see the number of larvae. And the thing is that tank is sort of has a nice wall, flat wall that the Aedes aegypti lay the eggs, and then they kind of hatch into the water and then they turn into adults. And that's not seasonal, it's go through the whole year because it's always water. So it's not like some of those vector borne that is you have a seasonality. Aedes aegypti actually can find good niches. And the other things, like, if as you remember, the houses that we visited, I think the word is gutter, right? The thing, yep, where the water, mm-hmm, drains. It's like we have terracotta mostly as part of the cover of the houses, and so with the leaves on anything, if you get any obstacle to the water draining, then for some time you'll get some water. It's like some standing water there, and it's a good place to actually get eggs and larvae from Aedes aegypti. Of course, this will dry because our rainy season is about 3 months. And then because of the evaporation rate, I mean, the temperature there is around 85 degrees Fahrenheit. So the water won't stay long. But the eggs, if they don't hatch, they can go into your posa. And then later, when there's more water, it can hatch. Not all will hatch, but it's just like persistence. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's like we have to kind of think it's not only the usual places, but odd places such as that. So it means surveillance for everyone. So it's like we need to kind of emphasize that we have to kind of be in all of us needs to be on a task force to fight the vector.
So kind of to follow up with what you were talking about before, where do you get a sense for where resources are being allocated? You gave some ideas of where you could have an intervention, but where are they actually being allocated?
I think the household, it's sort of a individual question. And I think one thing that I think it can actually be very helpful, and I think that's something that we can discuss with the local, local officials, is that we have in Brazil a very important program that is called Health Family Program. In those neighborhoods, for this group, there is a physician, a nutritionist, and health agents. And the health agents tend to live in the same community. So, and they have to visit each house. It's like each health agent has a number, and I think it's around 200 houses that they have to visit once a month. And then if there are some vulnerable people, like people with diabetes, of a child with some limitation, or someone with a neoplastic disorder, that they visit more often. So I think these health agents could be important in terms of this plan, retrain them to actually put the eyes not only into the usual they do, but this extra thing in terms of an environmental control. So I think right there, we have a force of over 10,000 people in my state that can be part of that. But it needs to be retrained so that you have new eyes.
But that's already set up.
So it's already set up. It's there. It's just a question of starting sort of intervention in these terms. So just put a new eyes to this thing. Because those people will actually, they have to weigh the pregnant women, they have to make sure that they don't have hypertension. So it's sort of in some way part of that. And of course, women who are pregnant now needs to be seen. So in my state, there are 42,000 pregnancy mean yearly, mm-hmm. 42,000. It's a 3.4 million population in the state. And now we have around 42,000 new pregnancies. So this is the worst. I think everyone would have a baby this year would be sort of worried about. The other thing is, so right there, we can retrain and easily we can put those people in the ground because they are already there. It's just a question of taking a look. We will need, because like those children, they need, we have to rule out whether it was due to other things. So there will be a burden to the state in terms of MRI and CT for these children, mm-hmm. which will be done in addition to all the other needs. Mm-hmm. And then we have to set up a place that those kids will be followed up. So that is in sort of being organized. At my institution, at the University of Rio Grande do Norte, our hospital will be doing the CTs and the MRIs for those children. And we're going to set up the protocol for interpretation and that. So we're going to have a database on that. And then we will have a geneticist and then a neuropediatrician who will be leading the team to kind of do the follow-up of those children. So those are things that are already in place. We just need to kind of reorganize. In terms of the research, which we were alluding, the president went to on television not too long ago, and she also had a team of scientists going to Brasilia to meet, and she's promising extra funding through the Brazilian Research Council. But I think it's in WHO, as you all read this week, also is gonna take an action, because it's gonna affect all of us. And I'm sure there are a lot of foundations that funds research in disease that will probably be helping with funding. And the United States is helping with the CDC. There are two teams from the Center for Disease Control. I said that right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Center for Disease Control in Brazil helping us, both investigating the Guillain-Barré syndrome, but also the microcephaly, and in the National Institutes of Health, who has always been support. I mean, we've been having support for NIH for quite a while. So I think NIH will probably. And then this virus, I mean, it will be probably an interesting model to understand. So I think, and there are isolates from different portions of the world, which will be important. So I think a world task force, I think it's an opportunity for countries like Brazil, US, and Europe, Africa, to actually work together and understand what's going on. If there is viral persistence, if the virus is the cause of this, if there's viral persistence, then we have a bigger problem than we were anticipating. But we need to do the work. We need to do the research to actually get the data.
Definitely. And you brought up some issues that we've kind of been discussing as a group about women's rights and, you know, how this is a big burden for women right now who are trying to get pregnant or maybe trying to avoid pregnancy. Is there talk where you've been about increasing access to contraceptives or to abortion?
Well, in Brazil, abortion is not legal. So it is, as medical student, as intern, I mean, I think the estimate is that quite a few abortions that are not done. And that's a big problem because, unfortunately, people can access abortion in different places, and it can cause a series of medical problems for women. So it's the disproportion in terms of that is tremendous. First of all, I mean, since abortion is not legal in Brazil, so the discussion is we're going to do ultrasound for all women, all pregnancy, and I think that's the idea, so that you can sort of decrease the anxiety. Do probably evaluation of the liquid, do recall, and try to identify whether they were infected, and so that people can at least be a little bit, have a peace of mind. The usage of repellent, the federal government is going to provide free repellent for all women who are pregnant, which will be important. But repellent, I mean, you really have to make sure that you know how to use it properly, because the bugs are very smart. So the repellent will be free. There will be better access to ultrasound during pregnancy. But you don't get 100% peace of mind with all those things. So it's going to put a lot of pressure on women. And of course, women who are at a more vulnerable economical situation will be the ones who will be harder for them.
So you were talking about giving the women ultrasounds early on to see if there were any tube defects or early in the pregnancy. Is there, my understanding of the testing that you can do for Zika is that it's a pretty limited window where you can see if someone had an infection either during their pregnancy or prior to it. And it was a blood culture that they were doing?
No, you can do, like for the mother, you can do the blood, and you can check whether there's viral particles.
Okay.
And usually it stays for very like a short window, like less than 5 days.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think that's optimal if you want to detect the viruses, like that window when like the first symptoms appear, and then to have viral detection. But it can also later you can detect antibodies. So you can do, there's an ELISA test to determine whether someone has been exposed to the virus. So you can know. You just, when you have antibodies, you just don't know when it occurred. It could have been like whenever.
Right.
The having the molecular testing and being positive means that you know exactly when that infection occurred, potentially. We just don't know how long viral persistence. So it kind of, because right. there are, it could be that there is an initial infection, it goes down, but it can come back again. We've seen for other viruses, so it can have sort of a bimodal thing, and you just don't know. And for pregnancy, it's if the virus is the causal, then is it virus itself that is causing that, because it passed that placental barrier and it's sort of neurotropic, or is some immune molecule that the mom is doing against the virus that's passing the placenta and is causing apoptosis of neural cells during development. So those are the things that, but in terms of determining the infection, you can do by molecular diagnosis. So you just take a blood and do the sera. From the sera, you will extract and then you use primers specific for the virus and you can do a PCR and determine. Or usually at this point, you don't have enough antibodies to determine by this, but then a few weeks later, you can do the ELISA that determines whether there is immunoglobulin antibodies present.
I'm just wondering too, you mentioned earlier dengue and some of the other chikungunya and some of the other vector-borne diseases. If you could just speak a little bit towards the challenges that are unique to Zika compared to those, other than obviously not having as much information about Zika and the data to back up associations.
I think that the challenge will be the same because, I mean, we don't know much about chikungunya either. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's in terms of symptoms, the ones, I haven't seen too many cases because chikungunya is apparently is just getting there. So just coming to here, I saw 6 cases of chikungunya that we actually proved that was chikungunya positive by molecular biology. But the symptoms of chikungunya is much, it gives more symptoms than Zika. But the challenge will be the same. The outcome may be different, right. But in terms of controlling, the challenge will be, I believe, pretty much the same. Because it's the root that would be the vector being a microorganism that is transmitted by a vector, and what is the outcome once one infected? We have that for dengue. We have 4 serotypes. And then if you have 2 serotypes, the likelihood that you have complications increases. So we have, I don't know to the top of my head how many people died of dengue last year in Brazil, but it was substantial. So it's dengue is still killing very healthy people. I mean, it's just, and then chikungunya, we don't know exactly, it's more morbid than mortality. In Zika, we have, if it is the cause of that, then we have the damage for those children, and then the burden, the task that the families will have to care for those children. And you can imagine like a kid from a very, from a family that doesn't have too many economical resources to be taken to a doctor, a kid that is growing to take on 2-3 different bus ride.
Right.
So it's in a child that needs full-time care. So one of the parents will not work to be able to provide care for these children. So I think it's the outcome, but I think the basic in terms of fighting for the root to try to control will be very similar.
Okay.
And I think an opportunity to get rid of dengue as well. I mean, it's not opportunity, but I think that it just emphasizes that we have to be smart and try to do pay attention for vectors. It's also coming from, this sort of virus stays silent for many years, I mean, decades. we are starting to have more and more people coming into the Amazon region, and new viruses are showing up from there, which are also vector-borne. So it's a time when we thought that that sort of things were, we knew what's going on, we appear with a new problem. Mm-hmm. And I think Ebola shows that, and Zika and Chikungunya are showing that, and then some new viruses that are coming out of the Amazons right now. So is this a combination, what we see? Are we gonna see the same phenotypes, the same expression of the viral infection in other places? I think in the next 6 to 12 months, we will be able to understand more.
Mm. I'm curious. So you're right, we have seen a lot of media coverage and as well as a lot of kind of responses to vector-borne diseases, especially in the last couple of years with Ebola in West Africa. I'm curious, you talked about the CDC kind of making commitment to kind of aiding in the research effort, but do you think that the proportion of media coverage either internationally or in Brazil is appropriate for Zika, or do you think that there's still room for kind of more concern all across the board for different vector-borne diseases?
I think in the end, I think this coverage, because it's reaching everyone. Everyone has a television, not everyone reads papers. But everyone sees on TV, so I think it's going to be an important time, because the way you're going to fight the vector, you end up getting rid of other vectors. Mm-hmm. So it will be sort of an opportunity to actually work and disseminate more. And also, I think it's like in medicine, the challenge. We know like what is the medication. But then there's a sort of a gap. We do the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I know the proper treatment for that, but delivering this treatment, making people adhere to treatment, are sort of challenge for other areas of human behavior or risk behavior. Mm-hmm. It's like we know that if we drink and we drive, we have an increased risk of killing ourselves or killing other people, and yet, it's like in my country, it's a big problem. That's why we have now zero tolerance for drinking. And we have to do that because it's the opportunity. I mean, we know, if you, as mentioned initially, I asked a 9-year-old kid and she knew, but what she and I and the others are doing to actually in our little backyard, as we say in Portuguese, fight this. So I think that's, so it's sort of maybe you always take a step back and start thinking of contribution that we as individuals can do to actually make our environment a little bit better. We have our cultures, American and Brazilian, are very distinct in the way we see things and the way we have expectations mm-hmm. from government and stuff. So it's, I'm just hoping, and I hope that we all take this as sort of an opportunity to get a better, healthy environment for everyone. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a time for education as well, because then we can kind of go back and discuss things. So we just can hope.
Right.
So I think in some ways, the coverage is important, but then we have to do the work to be able to understand sure. and calm us down.
I'm kind of interested in mosquitoes. Just the idea of like, if we do remove all mosquitoes, like are there unintended consequences of that within ecosystems that we might not think about?
Oh yes, it's almost like, do you want to get rid of our bacteria in our gut?
No.
I think and we can't, and we won't be able to, we won't do what we did in the past to get rid of the mosquitoes. So insects are important because they are important in terms of the agriculture chain and all that stuff. But I think there are ways that we can selectively contribute to decreasing the risk, at least in urban areas. The challenge now for Aedes aegypti is that in Brazil, is that 85% of the Brazilian population live in urban areas. So in some ways, you can, once we, I mean, we, the entomologists, more than anyone, have a lot of knowledge, and I think we can use that knowledge to actually control those vectors within the urban areas, because then we are targeting 85% of the population. So no, we cannot get rid of the insect. They are very important, as the bees and as the other things. So we have to be cautious. It's not like, it's like with our gut, we cannot eliminate our flora.
I thought it might not be an easy fix.
No, it's not an easy task, no. And then we don't want to do that. Okay. But I think we can get rid of the bad guys.
The bad guys.
The bad guys, at least we think they're the bad guys. They might serve other purpose, but right now.
And Danya Sama thinks like a superhero.
Yeah.
Get rid of the baddies.
Yeah, of course.
So since, well, vectors in general are tend to be like kind of smart and escape us anyway, and they're definitely more numerous than we are on the planet, would you say that the strategy is a little bit to control the vector source as much as possible until, you know, the development of a vaccine can come to fruition? Or how do you balance your mitigation strategy versus the possibility of a vaccine a few years down the line?
Yeah, I mean, the vector control will take, I mean, we haven't been able to do in 20 years.
Right.
Dengue, I mean, Aedes aegypti had been eliminated from Brazil for almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. And then it was reintroduced, I think, mid-80s. I think it was due to a ship that came from Asia and brought in, and I think introduced first in Peru, and then there was another incident in southeast Brazil. So within 10 years, it just went everywhere, and then it brought in dengue. Mm-hmm. So we have had 20 years, and we haven't controlled. But the strategy of controlling is different now. In terms of vaccine, there's one vaccine that's been approved, and it seems it's going to be for dengue. It's going to be in place. So we will need to know how much protection when you get like large population. So vaccine would be one way to think. Mm-hmm. For Zika and for chikungunya, there are people that, I mean, chikungunya people had already started. Zika people are going to start thinking about it. Yeah. And then we'll need a preventive. But if there is viral persistence, then we might need therapeutic blockage or something. So I think it's the data that we will be collecting in the near future. If we prove causal, that will drive the research in terms of the type of vaccine that we will need. Vaccine is always a challenge. I mean, we all know that we have very good, successful vaccines. But we also have had difficulties in actually getting a good vaccine. And I think it's a work that we will have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long it will take to have one?
Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. We need to do the work. And we need to start the work, yeah. I guess. That's.
Because the question, too, that I have with the vaccine is that a lot of times during testing for vaccines, you're not going to test them on pregnant women, but that tends to be with Zika one of the most vulnerable populations, and so I feel like that's almost an added challenge.
Well, but I think the way you can kind of what's the idea? The idea is, I think, which we could, of course, we have to do the study design, and right. By far I'm not there. But you can think that as a proof of principle, if we have like a preventive vaccine. And it's an endemic area, you just vaccinate everyone. Mm-hmm. If there is viral persistence, then it's another thing, because then we'd have to have more interaction with women who are going to have, we're going to get pregnant, because then you can get to a second line of things. So I think you can do the work once we have all the information. That will be able to be of importance for women who are at the childbearing age.
Right.
to be, so I don't think we need to test when they're mm-hmm. actually, and we will not, but we can do the work that will lead to what we think will be protective. It's like rubella, mm-hmm. right? Like the same thinking of rubella. I mean, you just vaccinated everyone. And
so just as kind of as a overall question, how you see partnerships going forward? You mentioned, you know, it's going to require a lot of surveillance as well as response. And obviously mosquitoes don't know political boundaries. So going forward, how do you see countries working together, different health agencies pooling resources, just to be able to get the data that you actually do need to go forward as well as to respond?
I think it's very hopeful. It's already, this is already happening. People sort of direct or indirectly are collaborating. I see like in Brazil, a lot of the laboratory work will be done by some universities, mm-hmm. but also Brazil has, the federal government has a big institute that is there are several departments in six states. That's the Fiocruz network, which will be doing a lot of the work from Brazil. Mm-hmm. Fiocruz already collaborates with different institutions in Europe and the US. And I think, boy, we all want to help. So mm-hmm. I think these boundaries, the political boundaries, I think probably we will not even think about it because we just need to get this work done. And will require all knowledge from different areas. I mean, in the United States and Europe and other places, there are really a lot of knowledge about different types of virus. Zika didn't come to the radar because it was something that you were not thinking that would get to the extension it's getting now. Mm-hmm. But it's quickly, I'm sure the virologists will come with really very important contributions. We need to ask whether this will jump to some other reservoirs, which will be, we hope not, but mm-hmm. vectors will, what the vectors need sometimes is just have the blood to be able to complete their life cycle. And with that, they can also introduce the virus can jump to other vertebrate. And then there'll be a greater challenge in terms of controlling the virus. We all know, like for Leishmania, that's of course it's not a virus, but there is having a reservoir that is not non-human makes it a challenge to control mm-hmm. The endemicity. But I think I see a lot of hope because there's a lot of discussion. I got like four emails from different institutions asking, how can we help? Mm-hmm. I mean, researchers who we knew from the past. So I think there's a lot of people trying to actually, what we can do to help. I mean, I think that's the way I see. Yeah. So I think it's a great opportunity to actually make it more solid collaborations and forget the political boundaries because as the way I see, this is a single planet and a vector, as you mentioned, is not gonna stop at the border to ask for to be checked for visa. It will come. So I think
visas aren't cheap in Brazil.
But there's retribution. I will also pay to get the U.S. visa. So if you charge $100, I'll charge you $100.
There you go.
But don't let that stop you from going to Brazil and trying to help out. Right?
There you go.
Yeah, speaking of which, how do you think that medical students or other students can get involved if they're interested in
I think it's just the same as the other routes in the past. It's just having someone who sponsors and being, I think it would be of help. I mean, we're going to do, if we get the funding or the little fund that we have now, we're going to start putting, use those cases as index cases and try to sort of build up the heat maps and see what were the risk factors, see things involved. So those are the classical epidemiological work mm-hmm. that we do for Leishmania that we're going to be doing for, I mean, the questions will be a little bit different because the exposure and the risks are a bit different and you have to distinguish whether is the virus, whether there are other factors going on. So I think it can be helpful. And I think it's a great opportunity for everyone. I think it's. I think people can contribute in different lines. Mm-hmm. I think.
So just to follow up too on the partnership question earlier, what does that look like when you have countries that have varying levels of resources and capabilities as far as public health and primary care and funding for research? How does that all play out with this outbreak?
I think it's similar to other outbreaks. It's going to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. And for instance, if you go to Central America, there's a problem also because there's a lot of political problems there with different groups. So that's a challenge also, how you're going to do to be able to have people who are in need to be seen. It's a new situation, I think. And I think when we are in times of crisis, I think people tend to be more cooperative. So I think Brazil has like about 210 million people. So mm-hmm. as the country in Latin America is the one that with the largest population.
Right.
But when you go to countries like in Central America, the population is a little smaller, which makes it a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. But then some of those countries may not have the same resources that Brazil have. So it will need more help from the international agencies. Okay. But then the problem might not be as great because the population is not as huge. Mm-hmm. So I think there will need a lot of partnership, sharing of information. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an opportunity. We have proved that human species, although we are a bit crazy, we have shown that we are able to collaborate in time of crisis. And I think that's an opportunity mm-hmm. for us to contribute. And I think there is room for that, and the idea is that what we learn in Brazil, we can share with the other countries. What the scientists from other countries, I mean, we have to work together. It's our Earth is a single ship, no political boundaries for insects.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate you coming in and talking with us today, and sharing your expertise on Zika as well as your experience in Brazil. So,
thank you. My expertise is like 3 weeks old. So it's actually, but I appreciate because it gave me the opportunity to actually think about it. And we're gonna try to actually put together some efforts so that we can at least address some of the questions. Mm-hmm. And we do hope to contribute. So even if we don't do the in-depth research, but at least an environmental aspect that we can do mm-hmm. Right away. So I appreciate talking to you guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you like what you heard on the Short Code Podcast today, leave us a review and some stars on iTunes or Stitcher. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to tell us about your moment of truth. If something strange or wonderful happened to you, if you're annoyed or pleased about something, or if you want to suggest a story idea to us, leave us a message at theshortcoat.com. Do follow and talk to us on Twitter so we can all stay up to date on what's happening at the margins of medicine. The show is made possible by this strange world we live in and a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine, Student Government, and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by C2C. Talk to you in 1 week.